Hey, where are you going, Jim? The elevator's over here.
Taking the stairs.
But our meeting's up on 8.
Yeah, I know.
But that's 8 floors up. That's like 8 times... 8, I don't... A lot of stairs.
That's the point. I've already lost a few pounds and earned almost $100 in wellness incentives.
Whoa, you're getting rewarded for working out?
Yeah, I know. I'm just as surprised as you are, Bob.
Fearless is full of surprises. That's the power of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Federal Employee Program. Learn more about our healthy benefits and sign up at fepblue.org/chooseblue by December 11th.
You are Locked On Eagles, your daily podcast on the Philadelphia Eagles, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On Eagles. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow me on Twitter at Michael J. Kist. Guys, we've got big time breaking news today. I've got a piece of personal news as well. Let's get right into it. I'm only going to be here with you for a little bit before I pass it off to my co-host, Benjamin Solak, but I wanted to get this in. The Eagles trade for the Bills cornerback, Ronald Darby, in exchange for Jordan Matthews, our wide receiver that was rumored to have been traded earlier in the week, and I had even said that maybe he would go to the Jets after Quincy Enunwa went down. So Ronald Darby for a third-round pick, and Jordan Matthews, our wide receiver. Guys, I love this trade. I was watching the game last night, and I'll get into how that experience was for me in a second here, but I think I tweeted out that Patrick Robinson wasn't going to be able to finish reading this tweet because it was already getting separation on him. So we knew we needed help at the quarterback position. Ronald Darby is a good one, and I am excited for that. So I'm sure Ben's going to get into some of that as I pass it off. But I was watching the game last night, and right around when the second half was starting, my wife was having bad contractions. So if you didn't know, you know, she's 9 months pregnant. We go to the hospital. I missed the second half of the game. I'm like, oh, man, I tweet out. I'm not going to be able to get a Locked On Eagles podcast. I apologize. You know, the baby's probably coming tonight. So they send us home for a couple hours. We get home. The contractions don't stop. We get back to the hospital at about 5 a.m. And immediately, man, my little boy came out. So Augustus Dean Kist was born at 5:16 this morning. And I couldn't be more excited. So as far as some of the analysis from last night's game, I'm going to let Ben handle a lot of that stuff. I do want to say, attaboy Wentz, 4-for-4 and a touchdown. That crazy play where he shrugged off Clay Matthews and hit Mac Hollins, and Mac Hollins eluded Kevin King, who we talked about on here yesterday, and then threw a stiff arm and got in the end zone. Guys, I don't know if there's a wide receiver play from recent memory that got me as excited as that one did. That's a fantastic sign. Derek Barnett, who we talked about on this show yesterday, had 2 sacks. We talked about the lack of an inside counter for Barnett, and he showed that off first against Jason Spriggs, their backup left tackle. So that was also encouraging. Some good hand usage, an inside move against an overset, got the sack. The next play, you know, nice hustle play, getting there to Brent Hundley to trip him and get his second sack. Very, very encouraging signs. Now, with all that said, I just wanted to touch base with you guys and let you know what was going on. I would love to give you some second half analysis and really delve into what I saw in the first half, but you know, I've got to rush back to the hospital. So what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to pass it back off to my co-host, and this will be your first taste of the brilliance of Benjamin Solak. Ben, take it away, brother.
Well, Mike, I do appreciate that intro. Mike is a hyperbolic man, my friends. I am not nearly the individual he claims me to be, nor the talented analyst that he is, but I do appreciate him leading up to me so well over these past couple of days, and I'm excited to make my debut for you guys. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Ben. Benjamin Solak is the full name, but my friends call me Ben. You can find me on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. Solak is S-O-L-A-K. I cover the Eagles for Bleeding Green Nation, and I cover the draft for Pro Football Spot. Those are my two big spots if you're looking to find my work. I've been an Eagle fan my entire life. You know, I grew up in Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania, which is northeast corner of the state, up in the Poconos area. My pops was a Steeler fan from Western PA. My mom is a Jets fan from New York, and I was a rebellious middle child who just wanted to like somebody different, and the Eagles were the team of my area, so an Eagle fan I became. Now I'm a 20-year-old college student up at the University of Chicago. I'm a comparative human development major, but I've been writing now for almost a year. I started at Section 215, which is the fan-sided site that covers Philadelphia sports. A great site. Love the people who work there. Recently started at Bleeding Green and recently started Pro Football Spot. I've been working with Mike now for the better part of a year. We just got, you know, similar circles, both Eagle fans, both big draft junkies. and we're just working together, you know, sharing notes and learning from each other. Now it's a pleasure to be Mike's co-host here on Locked On Eagles, and I'm excited to work with you guys. That being said, no better episode on which I could possibly debut. So much news in the NFL this week. Definitely want to talk about the Eagles preseason game against the Packers. A lot of good stuff there. Fun stuff to see. Definitely want to talk about that huge Darby and J-Matt trade. Huge move by Philadelphia. Could have massive ramifications for this season and seasons to come. But I'd like to start with the Ezekiel Elliott suspension. For those of you who don't know, the commissioner's office handed down a 6-game suspension to Ezekiel Elliott, the running back from the Dallas Cowboys, entering his sophomore season. In the letter given to Ezekiel Elliott from the commissioner's office, they explained that the suspension wasn't necessarily due to a domestic violence incident, but a repeated pattern of poor judgment and poor behavior, I believe was the quote. If you compare it to the past suspensions for domestic violence incidents and activity like this, it definitely seems a hefty suspension, but from an objective standpoint, this is a good sign. The way the NFL approaches domestic violence is changing. In the past 2 years, the Ray Rice situation hit the NFL hard. They were not prepared, and it was absolutely bungled. They were confounded by the Greg Hardy situation, and they just, I mean, they messed that one up too. Just last season, you know, and I've seen this kind of apples to orange comparison made on Twitter by a few Cowboys fans and a few indignant pundits, so on and so forth, that John Brown last season was just, you know, given a 1-game suspension after he admitted to some serious domestic violence in his relationship with his wife. And now for Ezekiel Elliott to be handed a 6-game suspension when he never admitted to anything and he never was convicted of anything, well, it's difficult, but I do truly believe that this marks a change. You know, there's finally some teeth to the domestic violence policy, which is a thing we've all been waiting for. Nobody looked at the John Brown suspension and said, you know, that is equitable, that is right. You know, we should suspend guys 4 games when they use steroids and only 1 game when they hit a woman. Nobody, I don't think, had that opinion that John Brown's suspension was worthy, that it was enough. Ezekiel Elliott's suspension, you may disagree with the length. However, it marks a change for the NFL that they're taking domestic violence oh so very seriously that if you're even remotely near a case of it, they're going to start coming down on you hard. It's very clear that they understand the public perception of this sort of an issue. They understand what it means for their players and their personal conduct policy for people to be involved in this sort of activity, and they're starting to come down on it harder. Now, this is one instance. This is just Ezekiel Elliott. The next time there's a domestic violence issue, well, we have to see the same level of stringency to assume that this is actually a change in policy. However, if it is, this is a good day for the NFL. It's the hope and the prayer that they can begin to approach domestic violence with the seriousness with which it must be approached. While there's warranted concern over the fact that, you know, Elliott was never convicted of anything, you know, the letter cites the St. Patrick's Day incident where there's video of Elliott pulling down a woman's shirt. You know, there's this powerful line talking about the incident in Columbus, which was the domestic violence accusation, where it just simply says in the letter, on multiple occasions, you used physical force against Miss Thompson. And that's just like a very clear statement that, listen, we know this. You know, we have a conglomerate of photographic and testimonial medical evidence to back this up. That we believe used physical force, and we are not, you know, the kitty gloves are off. You know, we're approaching this with great gravity. And for me, that's something positive. You know, I'm glad that the NFL is approaching things in this way. And so hopefully, you know, we can look back in 2020 and in 2022, a 3- and 5-year scope, and look back and say this was a moment where the NFL really started to get stringent with their policy on domestic violence. From more of a subjective standpoint, you know, looking at this from an Eagles perspective, you look at the first 6 games that Dallas plays. Of course, they have a week 6 bye, and so he'll be missing the first 7 weeks of the season, only coming in at week 8. They're looking at 3 away games, 3 home games. They've got the Giants in the first week, and then they're in Denver, and then in Arizona on back-to-back weeks. Then the Los Angeles Rams come to visit, then the Packers, they take that bye week, and then they're visiting San Francisco and new head coach Kyle Shanahan there. That's an interesting stretch because there are a few competitive teams there. You have to imagine that Denver is going to remain competitive with that defense regardless of who's under center. You know the Green Bay is going to be competitive every year no matter how slow of a start on which they get, no matter how much they may have to relax come week 6 or week 7. Green Bay will always be competitive with Aaron Rodgers at the helm. And, you know, a revamped New York Giants defense could do incredible damage to a Cowboys defense that does not look impressive whatsoever. And so there's something to be said there for losing Elliott for those 6 games. You're looking probably at a combination of Alfred Morris and Darren McFadden. You have to imagine replacing Elliott and hoping to replace his production. However, with the retooling that's occurred on the Cowboys offensive line, And with the lack of Ezekiel Elliott, you have to wonder how efficacious that run game is going to be. I still imagine to be one of the better ones in the NFL simply because it's not like Travis Frederick and Zach Martin and Tyron Smith have gone anywhere. You know, they're still around and they're still doing incredible work there in Dallas. However, you do not have the quality of running back behind that line, and you do have a couple of new starters there. That's going to put a lot on Dak's shoulders, and if he's really to grow in his sophomore season and to validate the incredible rookie season that he put out, and there's no minting words here, Dak put out an incredible rookie season. You can say whatever you want about a supporting cast in his situation. He did the work necessary to really propel that team forward. You know, Mike talked about winning in spite of a guy, winning because of a guy, and oftentimes they won, you know, at least with, or in some cases because of Dak Prescott. And so he really has the opportunity here to validate himself as a franchise quarterback and to prove that his first year wasn't just some flash in the pan, you know, happy circumstances, you know, great fortuitousness of a few variables coming together. And so it'll be really interesting to see how Dak approaches that situation, especially when we're talking about going to Denver and going to Arizona in back-to-back weeks, week two and week three. Those are two very talented secondaries and two teams that can rush the passer. I'm particularly looking at that Denver game because you know that if Denver is not afraid of the run game, they're going to set their edge rushers, you know, straight on their teeth and say go. You know, they're just going to fire Dak on all cylinders. They know they have the men and the Aqib Talib, Chris Harris Jr., who can match up on the sidelines and play man-on-man coverage, cover it one-on-one. They're going to send blitzes. They're going to send confusing looks. And Dak's really going to have to beat that defense. I don't anticipate Alfred Morris and Darren McFadden generating enough of a run game that Dallas can play the game they so often played last year and simply tire defenses out and run them, you know, scorch earth and just eat the clock and ball control, so on and so forth. And so that Denver game could get very, very ugly for the Cowboys offense quick. And then you go to Arizona, and Arizona doesn't necessarily have the pass rushers, the quality of pass rushers that Denver has. However, they do have an extraordinary secondary. Of course, you know, the Buda Baker pick, I love. You got Tyrann Mathieu there, Patrick Peterson. You know, they've got a lot going positively in that Arizona secondary. And so those would be two very interesting games to watch for Dallas and for Dak. Missing Zeke and not having his production, not being able to rely on him to consistently ground out 4 or 5 yard carries.
Is democracy in danger or decline? Condoleezza Rice, William Galston, and Carlos Gutierrez and others take on this question in the fall edition of The Catalyst, a journal of ideas from the Bush Institute. Surveys show Americans place less trust in institutions like the media and business. Others contend America has faced far more challenging periods and emerged strong. Leading policymakers, Bush Institute experts, and respected journalists take on this debate. Read about it at bushcenter.org/catalyst.
But that's enough about the Cowboys. I'd rather talk about the Eagles and my man Howie Roseman, who just sent a third round draft choice and Jordan Matthews for Ronald Darby, the corner out of Buffalo. I mean, I remember I tweeted it out about 5 minutes after the trade. I don't think anybody can overestimate how huge of a pickup this is for the Philadelphia Eagles. Ronald Darby, after watching his rookie season in Buffalo, you know, we were thinking, all right, this is going to be a top 10 cornerback within 2 or 3 years. You know, this is going to be a guy that you consistently game plan against when you come in as an offense. Now, he had a down year in 2016 for sure. And to be honest, everybody in Buffalo had a down year in 2016. You know, there's not much to be said there. It was Pro Football Focus's Nathan Jahnke. I don't know how to pronounce the last name, Nathan. I apologize. But, you know, he said Darby has 22 pass breakups in 2 seasons. No Eagles had more than 12 in the same span. And so that's what we're looking at right now. We're looking at a 23-year-old corner with 2 years left on his deal, $800,000 this year, 2017, and then $1 million in 2018. So he'll be 25 when his contract expires, who has just dealt for Jordan Matthews and a third-round pick. And to be honest, you know, I'm a Jordan Matthews apologist. I've always liked him. I've liked his game. I like the way he plays. I think he's a valuable asset. And I think Carson Wentz absolutely lost his most trusted ally in the passing game and his most reliable target. I really do. But with the logjam you had at the slot wide receiver position, with the fact that you really had no reason to believe Jordan Matthews could ever accelerate to the wide receiver one that you really need, a dynamic, powerful, game-changing wide receiver one, with that knowledge in mind, to be able to send him and then a late day two pick, a round three pick for a guy who is a legit CB1. No, I'm not trying to gas up a guy for whom the Eagles just traded. A legit corner one. A guy with terrific ball skills, outstanding fluidity through his hips, great footwork, nice physicality. This is huge. I mean, this is massive for Philadelphia. And if you asked anybody 24 hours ago the Philadelphia Eagles' biggest weakness on the roster, they were either going to tell you corner or running back. And I'm pretty sure the majority of people were going to say corner. And to bring in Ronald Darby with 2 years left on his deal is massive for this organization, for this front office. That's a fantastic deal. My favorite thing about this Darby trade is that, you know, you're getting him so cheap. $800,000 in 2017, $1 million in 2018. J-Matt was $1.1 million this year. So you're already saving money. But you really don't have to keep Darby after he turns 25 if you don't want to. Now, obviously, letting a guy like this walk in free agency, if he puts together the seasons we anticipate, you know, would be foolish because he'll probably play as a CB1. We've never seen him in Schwartz's scheme. That's important. However, he does excel in man-to-man, and we know that's what Schwartz would like to run, especially considering the skill set of Sidney Jones and Rasul Douglas, our second and third round picks, respectively, from this past draft. All those corners tend to man-to-man, and so it's clear Schwartz wants to move in that direction with this defense. But when you have Jalen Mills at 23 years old, Sidney Jones at 21 years old, and Rasul Douglas at 21 years old, all in the building, if you can get two serviceable corners out of those guys, and you have all of them under contract past when Darby's contract will expire in 2019, you have all of them under contract longer than that. And so if you can get serviceable production out of those guys, you don't necessarily need to re-sign Darby if he demands a huge amount of money come 2019, which is really, really big. So there's a lot of potential in the Eagles cornerback room right now. And honestly, this is with the Darby trade, I think this is the first time corner hasn't been a need on the Philadelphia Eagles offseason list since like 2011 or 2012. You know, those final years of Asante Samuel, Nnamdi Asomugha was brought in to no avail, you know, and then you started the gigantic just carousel, Bradley Fletcher and Kerry Williams and Leotis McKelvin and all this nonsense. You know, really, if Darby pans out the way that's anticipated and the way that he should, and if Sidney Jones is able to come to recovery, and also Rasul Douglas, who you'll find out very quickly, I'm a Rasul Douglas stan. I love that man. I truly believe in his ability. And I wrote a post on it for Bleeding Green Nation. It's not too difficult to find how much I love the way Rasul Douglas plays. I don't want to say corner is set because I feel like I need to knock on wood afterwards, but this is a really positive cornerback group with a ton of potential and a ton of youth for the Philadelphia Eagles. And that's honestly the next thing that I'd like to discuss. The youth on the Eagles defense is ludicrous at this point. If we're looking just at like the two deep, at the depth chart, going with the defensive line, you've got, you know, starting, let's say you're starting Vinny Curry, he's 29. Cox and Jernigan are 26 and 24 respectively, and then Brandon Graham is 29 on the other side. So every defensive line starter is younger than 30. You might be starting Barnett instead of Curry at 21, or maybe, you know, worst case scenario, you're starting Chris Long, who's 32. But you've got every starter on that defensive line, 29 or under, and you've got an heir incumbent, you know, an eventual starter or potentially starter this year in Derek Barnett, who's only 21 years old. You're going to the linebackers, you're starting Hicks, Bradham, and Kendricks right now, assuming Kendricks stays with the team, which we'll get to that a little bit later. 25, 27, and 26 respectively. And you've got Nate Gary as depth at 22. No one really knows what else is going to happen with Philadelphia Eagle linebacker depth. Kamugrier Hill is young, Don Cherry is young. You know, they've got guys who they can stick with plenty of youth. And so you've got nobody older than 27 with Nigel Bradham starting or as depth for the Eagles at linebacker. And then finally, the secondary is the most promising part. You're starting Darby, Rasul Douglas, Jalen Mills, all the 23, 21, 23. And then your safeties, you've got McLeod and Malcolm Jenkins at 27 and 29 respectively. At depth, you're looking at Terrence Brooks at 25, Sidney Jones is 21, and then even Patrick Robinson, like the veteran of the group. He's 29 years old. He's not even 30 yet. The average age of a defensive back in Philadelphia is 25 years old. And if you look at this defense, if you're assuming that, like, just for fun, Derek Barnett starts and Rasul Douglas starts over Chris Long and Patrick Robinson, two of the oldest Eagle defenders, your average defensive lineman is 25 years old. Your average linebacker is 26 year old. Your average defensive back is 25 year old. That's the average age of your starting defenders on this Eagle team. That youth is insane. That youth is insane, and it's wonderful. And it's the exact direction you wanted the Philadelphia Eagles to trend moving forward, trying to retool a defense and give Jim Schwartz the power, the youth, energy, and the excitement, the teachability, the coachability to come in and really sculpt the defense in his image that can be impactful, that can be some of the top five defenses that he produced over the years when he was with the Lions and when he was with Buffalo. And so looking at the age of these guys is incredibly impressive. On the flip side, you're losing J-Matt, you're losing a third-round pick. The first thing I want to talk about is going to be that third-round pick, because as of right now, Philadelphia's got a round one pick in 2018, and then no day two pick and no day three pick as a result of the Carson Wentz trade with the Browns, and now this Ronald Darby trade. And so the question was, and I posed it to my followers, how do you recoup these day two 2018 picks? One of the most popular responses came from Brandon Lee Gowan, who's my man. He's the editor and manager of the site Bleeding Green Nation, for which I write, and he just said, see you, Nick Foles. And it's true, Nick Foles has now put together the greatest camp, the most encouraging camp for a backup quarterback, and he could be wanted elsewhere. I mean, at one point, this guy was viewed as a starter in the league. He has the arm talent for it. He has the potential for it. And as we know from Sam Bradford in last season, when quarterbacks incur injuries, teams get desperate. And the Eagles do have Nick Foles, so they can move Matt McGloin also in the trenches. And I like McGloin. I think McGloin is absolutely a serviceable backup in this league. Of course, backup quarterback, one of the most underrated positions, but you can move Nick Foles if you want to. So there's a possibility there of grabbing maybe some more day three picks and being able to flip those into day two picks, as we know Roseman loves to do. We do also have Eric Rowe and his playing time in New England to pay attention to. I believe the number is 50% of the snaps if Rowe plays, or it might be 75, I'm not sure. But Eric Rowe's playing time in New England can turn into a day two pick, depending on if he sees starting reps. The Eagles do have 3 4th rounders this year. As a virtue of some of the other moves that Roseman's made over the time. And so those 4th-round picks can definitely be turned into day two picks if need be. And then, of course, you have Michael Kendricks and Jason Kelce, two guys who have been on the outs, who've been on the trade block for multiple seasons now, and the Eagles have never been able to move them. But with linebacker injuries, and Mike talked about some of these in Miami, Raekwon McMillan's 2nd-round pick towards ACL, real big shame there down in Miami. San Francisco lost a linebacker. Of course, they drafted Reuben Foster, but their depth isn't looking fantastic. And Washington just lost Trent Murphy, and their linebacker depth hasn't been pretty either. And so there are a lot of teams looking for linebackers. Michael Kendricks is an athletic option. He could probably be had for the cheap because it's very clear for everybody involved that he wants to get out of Philadelphia. And, you know, if you're gonna get him doing what he can do well, which is blitzing the quarterback and attacking downhill, he has the potential to thrive. He's an ex-second-round pick. He just never really fit into what the Eagles needed from a linebacker. Always, you know, a scheme confusion for him. And so there's lots of places to move Kendricks. And then finally, you've got Jason Kelce, who, you know, with Steven Wisniewski behind him, Isaac Samuelo, Chance Warmack, there is interior offensive line depth that Kelce has been experiencing a bit of a downturn on Doug Peterson's offense in the past year. You can move Kelce if a team becomes desperate for a starting center in a pinch. And so there's ways to recoup picks. And knowing Howie Roseman, he's going to, because that's what Howie does. And really looking at the moves that Howie's made since he got the reins back from Chip Kelly is really impressive work. And you can tell he took the time off that he had seriously. The last thing I'm looking at for this episode, and, you know, almost out of time already, is the preseason game that happened yesterday, which we envisioned was to be the focal point of this episode. But with everything that's gone down, you know, we're just getting to it now. Obviously, Mac Hollins showed up, and that's why kind of he's in this conversation right now. You know, Mac Hollins has a great preseason game, and the day later, the Eagles are moving J-Matt. I don't think those are necessarily as correlative as some people do. I think, you know, the plan to move J-Matt was kind of already in place. But obviously, it's great to see Mac Hollins stand up the way that he stood up. You know, that stiff arm was filthy. Man, that stiff arm was filthy. And while we're on the topic, shout out to my man Trey Sullivan, about whom I know absolutely nothing, but man, he stuck it. That was a hit, and that's just so much fun to see in a preseason game, you know? But anyway, Mac Hollins, obviously, you know, he was working with Wentz on that play, and Carson had a great night, you know, 4 for 4. Mike shouted him out at the beginning of the podcast. It's really nice to see the way that Wentz has been retooled. The offense has been improved around him. You know, hopefully the offensive line can stay intact this year. Johnson can stay on the field and really give him the consistency he needs in front of him. But boy, does he look sharp. And yes, I know every caveat about it being a preseason game and it's a training camp video and so on and so forth. Yes, I understand. But I enjoyed watching Carson Wentz play, and I could see marked differences from his tape from North Dakota and his first year with, you know, with Flip and with Coach Reich and with Coach Peterson. You can see the changes. At the end of the day, you know, we can make all the comments we want about training camp videos and preseason games. Good players look good in training camp. Good players look good in the preseason. And bad players tend to look bad in training camp and bad in the preseason. And Carson Wentz looked good this preseason, and he's looked good at training camp. I'm not going to ask any more questions than that. He looks sharper. I know he's done work over the offseason. I like what I'm seeing from Wentz. Of course, Derek Barnett comes in with 2 sacks on the day. One of them, you know, on a screen, a nice little cleanup play. But that first one there against Spriggs, with the inside move, that was pretty. And this is where, you know, I'll take a much bigger pause, you know, because it was one play. The main thing that shows to me is coachability. Barnett needed to improve his inside move, and you could see there that against Spriggs, when Spriggs overset and when he opened up that inside door hard, as most, you know, SEC blockers did against Barnett because they weren't fearful of his inside move, Barnett recognized and responded clearly in a way that he had been coached to. That throw with the left hand there, that inside move is not prevalent on his college tape. It's clear that the coaches wanted him to work on that in the preseason game. He threw it out there and it was successful. Will it be successful every time? Heck no. And there's more than a few clips where Spriggs locks up Barnett pretty good. That being said, it was a positive thing to see. It was Barnett getting a sack on an inside move. He's going to need to do that in the NFL, and he did. And so that was a lot of fun to watch for Barnett. I share Mike's feelings about Barnett. I share his tepid takes and his concerns. However, Mike's done a ton more work on Barnett than I have, and so I'll always default to his evaluations thereof. However, you know, it was nice to see Barnett get in there and get a couple of sacks in his preseason game. In no way, shape, or form is that a bad start for the rookies. That's fantastic. Last thing that I noticed big for me was two little ones. Number one, Terrence Brooks got a ton of playing time. You know, I was checking out the snap counts that Bleeding Green Nation produced, and they noted that Terrence Brooks had a lot of playing time. I think that's huge because backup safety has been a need for Philadelphia for a bit. And especially when you have a safety like Malcolm Jenkins, who you love to move down to the line, and you like to move him into the slot, and you like to get him on matchups with tight ends, so on and so forth, you need to be able to put a third safety in there and trust him. And I think Philadelphia's trying to figure out if Terrence Brooks is that guy. You know, they brought in Corey Graham from Buffalo, another, you know, Buffalo guy that was brought in. They've had Jalen Watkins kind of flitting around for a while, but he's always had his tackling issues. I think they're really trying to take an extended look at Brooks and see what he can bring to the table. The other note that I had kind of works off of that Jenkins in the slot, Jenkins down near the line of scrimmage idea, and that's that I love to see the playing time Nate Gary got last night and the amount that he produced. He was active on special teams as well, which he'll have to carve out a role there in order to make the roster, certainly as a fifth-round pick. But I also, Gary was really my sleeper coming out of this class. I like Elijah Qualls too. You know, Gibson I was never really hot on. I'm a big Donnell Pumphrey guy, but they're hiding all their Pumphrey sets. You know, he was not really used last night the way that he'll truly be used. Obviously, Sproles was sitting out as well, but Gary was the guy where I really dived into his tape after the Eagles drafted him. I said, okay, you know, not this year, but there's certainly something here as far as his ability to play instinctually, his ability to recognize and move downhill and attack. You know, he definitely doesn't have that speed and that change of direction for the safety position. However, you can envision him as a linebacker. He was moved around the defense and he was making some plays yesterday, and it was just fun to see him out on the field and transitioning to that linebacker role. We've heard reports out of camp that they've liked the way he's looked, and I saw it there against Green Bay. I definitely saw Gary making some plays that made me feel positively about his transition to linebacker down the road. Those are my quick notes from preseason. You know, obviously, maybe we'll get more deep into the Packers game as the week goes on. Next week, you might be looking at more episodes with both myself and Mike on the pod. Mike did a great deed in filling in for me as I've been wrapping up the summer work that I've been doing. Of course, right when I was free, Augustus Dean decided to come into the world and wrench Mike away from us. But of course, we're so glad for Mike and his family again, and we wish them all the best. Hopefully next week, you'll see both of us on the pod. We might be doing some positional previews, talking about some camp battles. I know there's a lot of guys on whom Mike and I agree, and there's a lot on whom we disagree, and so it'd be fun to get into those folks. Until then, signing off, this is Ben Solak, and as always, stay locked on with Locked On Eagles.
Is democracy in danger or decline? Condoleezza Rice, William Galston, and Carlos Gutierrez and others take on this question in the fall edition of The Catalyst, a journal of ideas from the Bush Institute. Surveys show Americans place less trust in institutions like the media and business. Others contend America has faced far more challenging periods and emerged strong. Leading policymakers, Bush Institute experts, and respected journalists take on this debate. Read about it at bushcenter.org/catalyst. Catalyst.